The power of the Apollo Alliance is reaching into places that often are overlooked. The nation as a whole is arming itself with new technologies in the most unusual places. We see how America's original native peoples view this new American vision when we return with more Voices of the Earth here on the Wild Side News.
Now I'd like to welcome Bob Goff, who is the Secretary for the Intertribal Council on Utility Policy. Bob, why don't you tell us what that actually translates as?
The Intertribal Council on Utility Policy is an organization of tribes interested in developing recommendations and policies that enhance tribal utilities, whether it's telecommunications or energy-based utilities on reservations in the Northern Plains.
For some reason, the Apollo Alliance seems to meld with your visions for Native Americans across America. Tell us why.
Well, I think looking at a number of factors, we've got a rather parallel agenda. We've looked at issues in the Northern Plains, the persistent drought, the threat of climate change, long-term drought conditions extending there, utilized that have basically diminished our hydropower resource in the Missouri River, the Upper Missouri River. And tribes there have looked to the tremendous opportunities in renewables, particularly wind energy, which is not only a clean generator of electricity, and we've got probably the sweet zone in the country across the Northern Plains, Montana, Wyoming, the Dakotas, for the production of wind energy, but it's also an energy form that doesn't consume water, and it has the advantages of ultimately being able to provide jobs and a basis of a vibrant, sustainable economy for Indian tribes in the Northern Plains and elsewhere across the country.
So in terms of your interest, you would be interested in literally setting up alternative energy sources, wind, solar, and others. And then what would be the outcome of that locally?
Locally, tribes have a very great energy need. If you live on an Indian reservation, you may be aware that you're 10 times more likely not to even have electricity in your household than anywhere else in the country. And if you do have electricity on a reservation, you are more likely paying a far higher percentage of your household income to consume that power. So there's some very important reasons for tribes to want to be able to generate their own power, be in charge of that economy, have that the kind of economy that meets local needs. But because of our tremendous resources of renewables, one of our tribal chairmen, Chairman Tex Hall, up at Fort Berthold, was looking at the map of the resources on the Fort Berthold Indian Reservation, and he said that they've got 17,000 times more power in the wind than they can use on the reservation. So whenever you have that kind of surplus of potential resource, you don't mind gearing an economy towards being able to meet your own needs and exporting that to other uses in the region.
So these new technologies would actually bring income, conceivably, sizable income to the tribes themselves.
That's true, and conceivably income for a long, long, long period of time. The idea of a sustainable resource wherein after 30 years you don't end up with a large hole in the ground, with water table issues, water problem, water pollution issues, air pollution issues. At the end of 30 years, you've still got 100% of your resource left, and you've been able to enjoy a revenue stream from the energy produced.
Now, I know that a lot of Native American tribes make quite a bit of their income from oil and gas leases around the country. How would these two different systems work together?
Well, oil and gas tend to feed transportation and, to some extent, electricity with the gas, but that runs on separate pipelines, and reservations across the West are blessed with an amazing variety of resources but most of the tribes have not been in the position of owning the generation facilities and the like. It's usually been off-reservation corporations that have come on and set up and worked out deals and the like, with few exceptions. But renewables is something where you don't need to set up a 500 megawatt power plant to be able to get into the business. You can do it incrementally, 20 megawatts, 40 megawatts, 80, 100 megawatts. These are smaller projects in terms of their economic capital upfront costs and are within the realm of tribes being able to build their capacity, develop it, grow it, and own and operate, and then thus fully benefit from ownership of these facilities.
The startup of various oil and gas production facilities does involve labor, but that eventually ends, and then pretty much the labor pool is dissipated. You're really looking at a transformation where this could become an ongoing manufacturing system and means of providing jobs and sustainable futures.
We would love to be able to attract wind turbine, solar panel manufacturers to reservations, for the employment that it would bring and for the generation of revenue on that, as well as constructing and operating the facilities on the reservation. We are looking at training crews for the construction, installation of large-scale wind turbines, and these are, you know, towers that reach 200, 300, 400 feet into the air and have blade spans 77, 80 feet long. There's some very specialized work there with the crane operators, but there's some very important work that could be easily trained for with regard to the foundation building and the ongoing maintenance on those levels. Once crews are trained up to do that, as development takes place off the reservation as well, tribes could be in the position with the trained labor pool to be able to meet those off-reservation needs as well. We're looking at the spin-off industries that could grow around energy production on the reservation, such as utilizing it at home for greenhouses and other kinds of industries that would also employ people, and things like greenhouses. You've got the better winds are in the fall, winter, and springtime, and that's not our normal growing season. So to be able to extend the growing season, provide good nutrition to the communities, and provide maybe vegetables into a regional market, these are the kinds of things we're also looking at tying into sustainable renewable energy development.
Now, in terms of where you are now and where you hope to be in the future, where do things stand and what are you hoping? I mean, what's actually on the ground these days?
Well, we've got, quite proudly, the first large-scale wind development project be totally owned by an Indian tribe on the Rosebud Reservation that was erected in the February of 2003. That has been sort of a landmark showing that tribes can organize to build and finance a project, and we took that particular project through a lot of hoops to be able to understand the industry, and right now Rosebud is looking to probably follow up with a 30 megawatt plant, which is about the economy of scale that size brings in, an economy of scale that makes the projects economic. We're looking to then follow that up with an 80 megawatt wind turbine project that would be intertribally owned and operated through a group of 8 tribes. It would be a large distributed generation utility scale project, 8 reservations, 10 megawatts apiece, scattered over the course of over the grid that stretches between 3 states, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Nebraska.
A lot of people associate casinos with Indian reservations. Are you forming partnerships potentially with casinos to look into the possibility of getting their involvement economically and in other ways to support these endeavors?
Absolutely. The first turbine there at Rosebud sits on the hill just overlooking the Rosebud Casino and Hotel. And that's the same place where the tribe is now looking at building a truck stop and larger facility. So there'll be plenty of energy use right there on the reservation for that turbine to be able to be used. And if you look at most reservations, those that do have casinos they are probably one of the better loads on the reservation. They use burn a lot of energy, use a lot of electricity with the lights and the machines and air conditioning, heating and the like. And those things run all year 24/7 very often. So that's the kind of base load that you'd like to be able to serve with an energy generation system.
Native Americans carry a legacy of being people who are very sensitive and connected to the larger realms of nature and the environment. What kind of discussion is going on amongst the tribes about the way in which this may actually serve to keep nature and the environment intact?
Well, at home in the Dakotas, we're extremely conscious of the environment, particularly with the changes we've seen just over the last 5 to 7 years. We've been sitting in a persistent drought in the northern Great Plains. The upper Missouri River is as low as it's ever been historically, and we're seeing, you know, reduced snowpack in the Rockies and Wyoming and Montana, and far less rainfall in the western parts of the Dakotas. So there's less and less water going into the Missouri system. Now, that Missouri River has provided the region with good, clean energy over the last 40, 50 years with the dams on the Missouri River. But as the water levels go lower and lower on the Missouri, there's less and less hydropower produced. In the course of the last 30 years, because demand has outgrown even the capacity of those dams, we've seen a lot of coal plants be built up in the region to provide coal power. We are today seeing that coal thermal power being generation being threatened by the fact that those systems require water for cooling. They evaporate thousands of gallons a minute of water just to cool down the steam that's used to produce the generation. Most power is produced with the most conventional fossil fuel power burns to boil water. Water creates steam. Steam generates the power. Then you've got to cool that steam down, and that's where a lot of water is consumed. And we're seeing today that the rivers are so low, the reservoirs are so low, that they're needing extension pipes to be able to even bring the water when it's available to cool these plants. So we're seeing curtailments occur in the Wyoming power plants. We're seeing curtailments threatening conventional generation below the dams as well, because there isn't that much water to release. So really, you look at the environment in the Northern Plains, we've built an energy system on hydro and thermal that also requires water, and we're seeing under these drought conditions that that whole energy system may be somewhat in jeopardy. Wind in that same system consumes no water and brings energy with no air emissions either. So we think there's a real contribution tribes could make to bringing reliability, a certain amount of redundancy to the energy system, to be sure that we've got a good long-term system that doesn't further threaten the environment.
Now, for people who want to know more about what is happening on the reservations and in the tribes throughout North America and the United States, how can they find out more information?
I would suggest they might turn to a website, www.energyindependenceday.org. And this is a campaign that's very unique, actually. It's a collaboration between a number of tribes who are interested in renewable generation and about 40 cities of the 150-some U.S. cities that have signed on to the global warming statements that the mayors have issued. They've looked and they said that many of the cities have taken global warming as a serious threat to their own local budgets, their own local environments, and they're looking to see what they can do within their own jurisdictions to reduce their emissions of carbon dioxide and other global warming gases, and they want to reduce the emissions through energy efficiency and renewables. And the tribes have issued an invitation to partner, cities and tribes, counties and tribes, to partner with tribes being able to produce some clean generation for consumption in the urban areas where most of our energy is actually actually utilized. So there's a great opportunity there, and anyone interested can go to that website, energyindependenceday.org.
What is it about the Apollo Alliance that you think works so effectively at uniting the efforts of the people in the tribes throughout America, and then America in its larger spectrum?
Well, the Apollo Alliance has recognized the great opportunity this whole country has, whether it's environmental or national security, to look at local production of clean, renewable energy, and we see that falls right in line with a lot of the work that we're doing. They're looking at a variety of policies that can enhance the promotion of renewable energy, as well as bringing the jobs that that can come with it to to meet local job demand and local energy production.
It's a great opportunity for all of us to really come together in a sort of a new national vision.
I think so. They've been looking at a number of variety of policy options for governments and for communities around the country, and we're right now looking to work with them to see how some of those options may be crafted to fit into the tribal context as well.
Excellent. Bob, is there anything else that we should know about?
Well, I think we're going to be out in California sometime this summer. The Conference of Mayors, I think, is looking at energy issues within their jurisdictions. I think there's an opportunity. California has taken a great leadership role amongst the states. I've got the honor of serving on the Western Governor's Clean and Diversified Energy Advisory Committee, which was put together at the request of the governors of California and New Mexico. And we're looking at goals of 30,000 megawatts of clean new generation and 20% energy efficiency goals to be met by the year 2015. So we're hoping to poise tribes to be able to participate in this so that states from the Dakotas West will be able to work together, tribes, states, cities where a lot of the power is consumed. So I think there's a great opportunity for a whole new wave of development in the West that sort of floats all boats, brings the economies and employment opportunities to rural and urban areas.
Well, Bob Goff, Secretary for the Intertribal Council on Utility Policy, I want to thank you so much for lending your voice to the Wildside News.
It's a great pleasure, and I appreciate the opportunity.
But what about our inner cities? Can the Apollo Alliance float the boats of those who have been paddling for too long without a good oar? We find out as we head back to the city and onto the streets when we bring you the voice of the earth from Oakland, California, here on the Wildside News.